Hello, I'm Larry Reedy, and welcome to my podcast. If this is your first time, we have interesting guests. Today, our guest is Jack Forrester, a friend of 70-plus years, retired businessman, has had an interesting career. And without further ado, Jack, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate being here.
Okay. Jack, why don't we start off with your early days, you know, where you were born, grade school, high school, and then I'll ask a few questions.
I was born in Cincinnati on Rapid Run Road, and I remember as a very young person that we used to be able to play kickball in the street, kick the can in the street. Of course, that no longer happens. Went to kindergarten at Carson School. Again, developed several friendships there that I enjoy today. Went from Carson School to St. Teresa School. Mixed emotions about St. Teresa. I wasn't a very good student for the last couple of years, the first few years I was. The only interesting thing there was that I was scheduled to go to Latin school at St. Lawrence, and when the week that we were supposed to leave, they canceled it. So I don't know what that would have done to my life. It would have been interesting if I'd become a priest, but probably not.
Yeah, I doubt that.
In any case, from there, from St. Teresa, I went to Elder High School. Again, had a lot of fun for the 4 years, developed a lot of good friends we still enjoy today. I guess the most interesting thing that happened to me at Elder was involved you. I remember one day, I think we were probably seniors, and we decided to skip school. So we're standing down on 8th Street waiting for a bus to go downtown, and I forget why we wanted to go downtown. But along comes Father Gruber. So we get a call when we get back to school the next day to come down and see Father Gruber. And I remember him saying, I recognize the red hair. So we spent some time in Jug as a result of that. But again, in the 4 years at Elder, were four really good years. The grades weren't up to what they probably should have been, but they were good enough to get me into Xavier University in the chemistry program. And so I spent the next, 6 years at Xavier. 4 years to get the degree, and then 2 years as an assistant, a laboratory assistant, supervising labs and helping the teachers with the classes.
Well, when you were in grade school, did you have any idea what you wanted to do when you grew up or high school?
I had no idea. In high school, I kind of developed I liked to either do chemistry or business. And I chose chemistry because I felt like it was a more rigorous process and it could help me no matter what I decided to do later in life.
Well, after Xavier, your first job, that was my phone. I forgot to turn it off.
One thing about high school was interesting. At St. Teresa, we had a pastor named Father Anthony. And Father Anthony was a holy terror. And if you remember in those days, it cost $100 to go to Elder,
yeah.
$50 from the family, and $50 from the parish. Well, Father Anthony took that to heart. And he had all the report cards from Elder sent to him. So when the report cards came, everybody had to get together at Cafeteria St. Teresa, and he would pick up each report card and make a comment. And boy, I got some comments. I'll tell you what. And if it was bad enough, your mother had to come, and my mother had to come a couple of times
with me.
So that was fun. Well, the interesting thing about that was, as nasty as he was, at one time he came to my mother and he said, "I need a favor." My mother, you know, she didn't want to talk to him because of the way he acted, but he wanted some rose boughs out of our yard. Because Mrs. Michael, who had been the secretary, always gave him rose boughs for the altar. So that got us back in his good graces, I guess.
So after Xavier, What was your first job?
First job was at Elder, teaching. Okay. I spent 2 years there teaching chemistry, science, and math. And we started the wrestling program at Elder, and I helped coach the wrestling team for a couple of years. We had mixed results because we were starting, and we got beat up pretty good a few times. But the kids really tried hard, and we actually took a couple of them to state in the second year. And we did win the GCL, so that was limited. We only had three participants at the time, but we beat Muller, and we beat X, and we beat LaSalle. So the kids felt really good about it. Again, I developed some kids that were friends, and I still see some of them, still hear from some of them.
Was Tom Davern part of that wrestling program at that time?
No, but he coached the swimming team.
Oh, okay.
And, Tom and I go back a lot of years, too. We had a lot of fun again. But he was there. He was at Elder. And he just retired just a couple of years ago.
So yes, yes.
He spent a lot of time there.
Okay, so the next job.
Then I went to Corning Glass, which was located in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Found out pretty quick that was no place for a young single guy because it was Dry County.
Oh.
It was just, no, you know, you didn't know anybody. It was a dry county. The only option I had was to go to the Knights of Columbus. They had beer. Yeah. You could go there and have a couple of beers, but that was it. So I was hired as a chemist and an assistant chemist, really. Then the chemist retired, and so that I had to take over as chemist for the plant. And then the quality control person retired, so I had to do chemistry and quality control. Learned a lot about statistics and things of that sort. Had a good boss, and had it been a little more young person friendly, I probably would have stayed there. But after a couple of years, I came back to Cincinnati. Had the opportunity to work for DuBois Chemicals, and spent 21 years then at DuBois.
And during the 21 years, I'm sure you didn't start out at the top or anything,
no.
But how did you progress and where did you travel with DuBois?
Well, my job was kind of a field chemist, I guess would be the best description. DuBois sold products for treating metal and for paint stripping and for control of paint booths and things of that sort. So there were a lot of chemistry involved, and a lot of the salespeople in the field were good salespeople, but they weren't chemists. It was a straight commission company, so it was interesting from that point of view as well. So I spent a lot of time initially learning the chemistry, and then about a year or so, and then going out in the field. And for the next, I don't know, few years, I was in the field probably at least 50% of my time, all over the country. I guess the favorite place I ever went to that I really enjoyed the most was San Francisco area, that whole Bay Area. I went to Alaska, I went to Hawaii. Alaska was interesting because it was later in my career that I went up there, and it was at the time when the pipeline was being developed.
Yeah.
So I got to Prudhoe Bay, saw the where the pipeline originated, and spent some time understanding how that all worked. And we had a lot of sales up there at the time.
Yeah. Well, when did you and Judy get married?
Oh, it was probably 61. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. Yeah. Because at the time, I was free, footloose and fancy free.
Were you with DuBois in 61?
Yeah.
Okay.
Still with DuBois.
So when was your first relocation after you were married?
Oh, that was 91. We moved to Detroit after DuBois had been sold.
Okay.
And we lived in north of Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting experience because, an hour north of Detroit, maybe 2 hours, it's a beautiful country. You get beyond Flint up there and you're in really great country. And so my son, we only brought one of our children with us, the youngest, and he and I spent a lot of time playing golf and just having a good time up there. And we were in Detroit for 5 years, Judy developed some friends up there that she still gets together with every month. Mm-hmm. They meet halfway between Detroit and Cincinnati for lunch. I still have some people that I keep in touch with up there. Again, if we had more family up there, I would live there. It was a nice place to live.
Yeah, I had some business going on in parts of Michigan, and one time on a vacation, we went to Traverse City, and I didn't realize this, and I don't know if this holds true today, but per capita, they own more boats than any state or city in the country.
Could very well be.
Yeah, I mean, just amazing.
Yeah. We had a friend that had a place up north of Traverse City that we, Howard Thieman, that we visited.
I know, I remember Howard.
Yeah, Howard, a good guy.
From St. William.
He was. We spent a few years at his place at different times, and Howard always had all the toys.
Yeah. So after north of Detroit, your next move?
Back to Cincinnati.
Back to Cincinnati. Yeah,
the Texo Corporation, which was a competitor of Thuboy.
And you were president?
I started out as vice president of marketing.
Okay.
And then they decided to sell the company. And they sold it to, this is the second sale I was involved because Thuboy was sold. And then I came back and Texo was one. The reason I was in Detroit was because Thuboy was sold to the Wyandotte Corporation.
Okay.
And I went up there as executive vice president of operations. It was a complete farce. They lost half of the institutional business of Thuboy first year.
Oh.
And so kind of a mutual agreement, I left, had a decent severance package, and came back to Cincinnati to Texo. And then Texo was sold to Nalco. They offered me the opportunity to move to Chicago, and I said, no, I don't want to move again. And so I stayed on. They made me president. I stayed on and shut down Texo in Cincinnati. After that, couldn't get another job in the chemical business. There weren't any available. So I went to work for my brother, who was in residential real estate appraisal. And I did that for a couple of years, 3 or 4 years, until the bottom fell out of the housing market.
Did you enjoy that?
That was kind of, you're outside.
Yep.
It's not so enjoyable in the dead of winter. But otherwise, it's outside driving around, and it was a good thing then.
But it was big change.
Big change.
Yeah. But, that's what I've said in the past. When I was in business, everything was in my comfort zone, and there's only been three things out of my comfort zone. Two was writing two books, and this one on the podcast, I'm not sure. I'm just about into the comfort zone in this one. It's taken some time.
Oh, I'm sure.
So you were back in Cincinnati for good. What year again?
It'd be 96.
96. And you went on after they shut down
Texo.
Yeah. How many different, and after your real estate appraisal, what came next?
That was it. I'm still doing that a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
I work from my house. They send the things to me on my computer. I go over, do really quality analysis to make sure they're done properly.
And, really?
Yeah. Now, again, that right now is very quiet.
Yeah,
the housing market's down. But, yeah, it was, maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 hours a week I would do that.
Okay, okay.
Something to do.
Yeah, keeps you out of bars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, in this real estate market, a year or so ago, they were paying $50,000 over asking price to get a house. And now with the interest rates, the housing market hasn't really dried up because the inventory's so low. And but you know, I think it's 6.5% now. See,
that's the way I think. So.
And you know, for somebody that's got a $200,000-$300,000 mortgage, that's a lot of money per month difference.
Sure is. Well, you remember. Number one is 17%.
Oh, Jimmy Carter. Thank you, Jimmy.
Gas station lines were half a mile long.
Oh, I was all that. Part of that one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sure.
I had, at one time, you know where Hopple Street Shell sure. is? Well, that was one of my stations. And what I did, the gas was rationed, and I had, you know, 10 service station. Well, I slipped the Shell drivers $100 and I had them take, instead of going to some of the smaller stations, I'd have them bring them to Hopple Street. And one, everybody was closed on Sunday because they didn't have gas. I opened on Sunday with no competition. I had to pay the guys extra to work, raised the price of gas 10 cents a gallon, and one day, and back there it was almost impossible, but one day I sold 12,000 gallons of gas. We had lines probably 2.5 miles long.
You're getting some reverberation?
I'll get to, oh, okay.
It might be the walls, I don't know.
No, I think I moved too close to to the mic. That's, see, where's I'm still learning this game here. So, but today's real estate. My one son just went through a divorce, and his wife wanted to keep the house, so she bought half of it, and he just purchased another home. And they actually came off the list price, you know, quite a bit off of it. So it's a changing market, and I don't know how long it's going to last. But they say Cincinnati, the rents are the highest for any major city in the country, yeah. And have raised more in the past year or so.
I was thinking about. One of my grandsons is kind of at loose. He's not sure exactly what he wants to do or where he wants to go, and he's living at home, but he has to move out. I was thinking about buying an apartment house and having him manage it, but with the interest rates and
yeah,
no way.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, it's funny when you look at the housing market and everything that's going on, the cost of food today, and later this week, my guest is going to be a guy named Matthew Fullenkamp, and he recently bought the Village Store in Oldenburg. This is a small store with a great meat market, and just every month on the first Friday, he has a big sale. So I think I go to Kroger's, you know, sometime, and I think their ground chuck was like almost $7 a pound or something like that. So I ordered from Matthew this time a whole top sirloin, 8 to 12 pounds. $4.99 a pound. So I'm having them made into 6-ounce cube steaks. Then I ordered another one to have ground beef packages. And I would much rather have a top sirloin than a chuck for $7 a pound, you know.
Well, one of the best example I can give you of increased prices, I usually eat a tuna sandwich for lunch, and I buy those packets.
Oh, yeah.
Of tuna, Starkist. Anyway, I guess it was the last time I bought them. They were $10 for $12, something like that. Yesterday I bought them. They were $1.49 a piece.
Oh my! Well, you
that's
know,
tuna.
Yeah, and it's a you know the restaurants, small restaurants are closing like crazy. And one friend of mine, I started Classic Pizza years ago, and the fellow that owns it now is a lifelong friend of my son Ted's, and known him since they were little kids. And he was telling me, we always, for 3 years that COVID was going on, we've donated large pizzas to everything connected with the hospital, police, and everything. I think the last time was 198 pizzas. And anyway, Chris was telling me that he had to increase the price. He gives me a break on them. And he said that and he was paying, I think, 40 cents a box for pizzas, to deliver pizzas in. $1 a box. That's just for a box. And the provolone cheese, everything, it's just out of sight.
Yeah. So, crazy times.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's going to get better, but, you know, it's going to take a while.
When? That's, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the market is just nuts, you know. It wasn't a premonition or anything. All you had to do was listen to what Biden's game plan was, and I had to pay a lot of capital gains, but I took both IRAs, my joint account, 85% went to government money, went to the money market, because it's probably the best thing I've ever done in my life. If I was younger, I would have probably ridden out the market. But at my age, you know, I don't want to go through it. So,
yeah. Well, it's, you know, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, election's coming up. It's going to be real interesting to see how this one goes.
Oh, yes, it is. And you know, the thing is, it's sooner or later, you and I don't like to talk politics, but sooner or later, you got to get some of the scum out of Washington. I mean, they're power crazy. They've been in office for 20, 30, 40 years. It's ridiculous. Our founding fathers never had any intention of having career politicians. And they, as soon as this election's over, give it 6 months, and they're already going to, the House is already going to start campaigning for the next election. So they don't get a whole lot done. But anyway, before we started talking, mentioned something really interesting. I mentioned to you, I'm going to try and get this gentleman on as a guest. I never met anybody that climbed Kilimanjaro. And read Ernest Hemingway's short story. I also saw the movie. And then you told me that your one daughter has been there, done that. Well, tell me how she got involved in that.
Well, she's single. And, you know, she was kind of, she works for the government. She's works for basically OSHA. And she's got a good position with the government. She's got her PhD now. And she just, you know, being single and living in Washington or living up around Washington, she just decided that she needed to do some adventure stuff. And for 3 or 4 years, that's what she did. She trained, I guess, a year to get her legs in shape for going up the mountain. And then she, after that, went to Antarctica just to see what it was like. And, you know,
what was it like?
Cold. She said, cold but interesting. She said, all you can see is Pelican crap. It's, you know, that's the only things down there. And the stations, the stations. So, but yeah, then now she's settled down.
Yeah. Did she go all the way to the top of Kilimanjaro?
Yeah, she said she did.
Wow.
Yeah.
mean, that's just incredible.
18,000 feet?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It's just really incredible.
Yeah, we were, she was not the best athlete or anything like that. We were surprised when she decided to do it, but she decided and she did it.
Well, you know, when I took four of the kids to Colorado for my brother's 90th birthday, and we were going up Rocky Mountain National Park, and when we hit 10,000 feet and I got out of it, that air was awfully thin, and they wanted to go to the top, and I said, well, you can pick me up coming back, because I actually got a little bit dizzy, and my brother told me at the time, I think he was maybe 3,000 or 4,000 feet above sea level. Said it took him 2 to 3 weeks to get used to it.
Yeah, we had a couple of sales meetings out in that area, and as part of it, we took snowmobiles up into the higher mountains. And at 5,000 feet, I was feeling it. 10,000 feet, I could hardly move. So, but it was fun.
Mike. Crazy kids, including the school teacher, they kept saying, let's go to a gummy store. That wasn't going to happen. So, and anyway, we're kind of in the golden years. Have any plans, exciting plans for the future?
Not really. We're just kind of taking it easy, and until things settle down, in the, you know, in the world, I don't think we'll do too much.
Yeah. But. And how about, how many children do you have now?
We have four.
Four.
Yeah.
How many are local or any
three,
of them?
Three are local.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bill, my brother Bill is youngest. He's the one who was in the appraisal business. He has his own company, but he's retired now. And my brother Jim, of course, you asked me about my kids. Sorry.
That's okay.
Jeff, the youngest, is with American Financial. He does IT work. John, the next, is sort of an entrepreneur. He's trying to develop a business which provides tools for appraisers to use. And he and some other fellows have developed an app for their phone where a person can walk around the house and get measurements of all the rooms, so it makes it, and then it draws a map. So
wow,
it's a pretty neat thing. But he's not the only one.
Yeah.
And my daughter Rebecca is divorced and remarried. She's living life for Riley right now. She has five kids; they're all gone, and she and her husband travel around and do what they want to do now, which is just great to watch.
Yeah. Well, what's really funny is, you know, we've got seven kids and 18 grandkids and seven great-grandkids. And what's neat about this, I'm looking, you know, I was no saint growing up, and neither were a lot of my kids. But now to see, you know, they have to interact with their kids, our grandkids, and you know, it's just fun to watch. Our one daughter, Matt, his wife is a operating room RN, and their oldest daughter is an RN. She went through Good Sam, and she's still working there, but I don't know if she'll do it before the holidays, but she's going to be a traveling nurse. Oh. And this is insane. I had no idea what a traveling nurse could make as far as money, but I looked it up, and if you could put up with Los Angeles, I think 312s, you know, they consider that 40 hours, you work 312s, $6,800 a week.
Wow.
And I think New York City was $6,200. And she's planning on maybe doing Colorado and a couple hospitals out there, $4,900 a week. Hmm. And I mean, yeah, it's see the country.
Yeah.
And the nursing shortage is so bad. I don't remember what they call Wishart now up in Indianapolis. It was the it's the equivalent of General Hospital years ago. They got metal detectors, cops on duty at night, and everything.
Like UC.
Yeah, right. But what they were hurting so bad for nurses, they put it on Facebook, advertised in the newspaper, $90 an hour to start.
Interesting, because Christy has a house in Maryland, one that lives works in Washington, and they just finished the basement to lease to traveling nurses.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because you know, and the thing is, I don't know why there's such a shortage, or it could be that a lot of hospitals, like for when Nancy was an RN, she 3 years at Good Sam. Well, a lot of hospitals several years ago said you have to have your bachelor's. So if you don't have that, get it. And you got, I don't know, they set 7 or 8 years. A lot of the nurses that were in their 50s said, I don't want to bother with it. And they got out of it.
Well, the other thing is that you just look at the development of hospitals. Every hospital now has 5 or 10 locations where they have to provide nurses. And the aging population is such that there's more and more people in the hospital. So all that adds up to you have to have more nurses. Yeah.
Well, you know, all you have to do is go to any pharmacy in any city and just look at the medicines that are in the racks waiting to be picked up, because the medicines has prolonged everybody's life.
Yeah. Well, right now I take, what, 9 different medicines?
9 different ones, yeah. I don't know what Nance takes, 5 or 6, but... and it's just, it seems like I'm always picking up a drug. You know, it's just, the pharmacists, like, we go to CVS just because of the people. And they got the nicest guys. And they're under the gun constantly. And some days we'll go up there or I'll stop by, and they might have one pharmacist and maybe 6 other people working there.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Yes. But anyway, I think I don't know if you have anything else we want to talk about.
No, I just leave it with one thing, and that's this. I've eaten in a lot of really good places all over the country in my travels. Oh. One of the best meals I ever had was right here last week.
Really? Where?
At the... I'm trying to think, Pepe and what's her last name? They're two people. It's down in downtown at 5th and Race or somewhere like that.
Okay.
And you have to have 3 or 4 people to really enjoy it, because they serve some stuff family style. But boy, we had a good meal.
Yeah.
I had the kids there.
Yeah. Well, you know, the place I have my birthday party is.
Yeah.
December 31st is their last day.
Oh.
And the help is a problem. And I think what happened, they were on a 5-year lease with the country club. And I think the country club might have just got a little bit greedy. Mm-hmm. And so they're gonna walk away from it. And I don't know what they're going to do, but they had to limit their menu, limit their hours because of help. But they were doing catering for weddings. And one Saturday evening, we were having dinner there. And they had 2 weddings that day. One had 300 people. One had 250. So, and their Sunday brunch, they would do like 500 people on a Sunday brunch. So... Yeah, I hate to see that. The Shermans, they're having some rough times, I think, too. Help, and, you know, they're real busy on the weekends, but during the week it's tough.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it is what it is. Hopefully it's going to get better. But it seems like in Cincinnati they're really well-known restaurants are busy all the time. But it's the smaller ones that just having problems. And okay. Aston Oaks, where we have our lunches, that's great.
Is that tomorrow?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we'll be down there tomorrow. But, you know, I've never had a bad meal there, and I think they did a great job for our reunion.
Yeah, they did. It was fun. I mean,
really, yeah. Really a nice job. Yeah. But anyway, Jack, I think maybe we'll just wrap this one up. And I really thank you for being here. It's been interesting. And have you got any advice for young people that want to pursue a business career?
The thing I've always felt is that if you get into a position of management, always hire somebody smarter than you are.
That's a good thought.
And let them do the work. Don't spend a lot of time telling them how to do it. Let them figure it out and do it. They make mistakes, okay, they'll learn from the mistake if they're smart enough. And in the long run, you'll develop a staff of people that's really exceptional. And I felt like what we developed at DuBois was an exceptional staff of people, kind of using that philosophy.
Well, you know, do you think today's generation, I mean, my one daughter is a HR director for fairly large accounting firm. And what they have to pay people just to start today that have no CPA experience, you know, right out of college. And there's a big shortage of CPAs right now because with all these crazy new tax things coming on, it's tough. It seems like every business has this problem. But you think they're still around. You think in your style of management of hiring somebody smarter than you, do you think they would have that drive to succeed?
It's hard. I've been out of it, so I really don't know much about how it's going on right now. When I was doing it, when I was working, it was there.
Well, everybody had that work ethic.
But now I don't know because I haven't been involved at all.
Well, it's interesting, but life is short. And, you know, I always felt that career or business, it's a means to an end. You know, I've said in the past I didn't really care what I did, you know, as long as we could raise a family, and Nancy and I had some cash to retire on. Wouldn't be out in the street, so to speak. So anyway, thanks again, Jack. And I think it's time to wrap it up, and we can thank everybody for listening, and hopefully. Listen again on the next podcast, and God bless America. God bless you. And I'll talk to you on our next podcast every Monday at 6 a.m. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Okay, Jack. Good to see you.